now is Dan Duggan. Dan covers the Giants as a senior writer at The Athletic. You can follow Dan on X on Twitter, at DDuggan21. The Giants, of course, come in here Sunday for the season opener. Currently, they are 6-point underdogs. I want to start with just kind of a big picture, Dan, for the Giants in 2025. Are Brian Daboll and Joe Shane in win or else mode? And if so, what does winning or else look like?
No, it's a very interesting question. It's actually something I wrote about on The Athletic today. Because I think what happens, you know, every offseason, it's easy to get kind of swept up in the positive vibes, and there's a lot of them around the Giants. You figure they, you know, totally remade their quarterback room. Kind of feels like a fresh start now. Daniel Jones is gone. They've added some talent on defense. So everything's feeling great. But then you remember, this is a team that went 3-14 last year. Ownership had to put out a statement the Monday after the finale announcing they weren't firing the head coach and GM. And then, you know, co-owner John Mara gave a press conference that Monday morning basically saying, like, you know, they got to win or else. I mean, those are your words, and he didn't exactly say that, but he basically said, you know, he's running out of patience. So, you know, you can interpret that how you will. So now we fast forward, whatever it's been, you know, 8-9 months. I don't think there's like they have to hit X amount of wins to be back for a fifth year. But I also think, I mean, they're in year four here. This isn't year two. It's not even year three. We're in year four. I think it's reasonable to expect some tangible results. Now, you know, of course, this regime got off to that good start, the totally unexpected start there in year one, and it's been just sliding the other way. So I don't know. It's nuanced, though, because you add in the Jackson Dart factor. So if you win six games, but three of them are by him late in the season, he looks great, then I think obviously they'll be back. But if you're just kind of like back in that 5-12 range, 6-11 range, and it's, and, you know, Dart gets in, doesn't look like anything special, I don't know. I think that's where it gets very complicated. And, I mean, they certainly can't afford another 3- or 4-win type season. I can't imagine how you justify bringing them back. So, yeah, like I would say that, yes, they should be expected to win, but I do think it's kind of a clouded picture, especially when you add in the rookie quarterback. And I know they don't want to kind of repeat the Daniel Jones era where they fired Pat Shurmur after 1 year, and they think that kind of contributed to Jones not building on, you know, any of the promise he showed early in his career.
You know, it's reminding me so much of Jay Gruden's final year in D.C. was 2019, and before the season started, it was like, yeah, he has to win, but if Dwayne Haskins plays and looks the part, then Jay will probably keep his job, even if they, you know, go 6-10 or 7-9. That's sort of what you just described. Like, if they don't, you know, have a really good season with Russell Wilson, he's done. But if they have an average to less than average season, but Jackson Dart looks the part, he's probably back.
Yeah. No, I mean, Dart is the ultimate X factor in this whole thing. Like, they ended this season with a quarterback room of Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito, then it would be, you know, wins and nothing else matters.
Right.
But you do add that rookie quarterback into the equation. That's what I'm saying. Like, that adds an element. And I think it's going to be super interesting to see when they decide to go to him. Like, obviously, ideal scenario, you know, Russell Wilson turns back the clock, they win 12 games, they're in the playoffs, and Dart gets his, you know, Patrick Mahomes rookie season. More realistic, you know, there's going to be some rough patches here. Russ is certainly on the decline. So when do they kind of pull the ripcord there? Because I think there's a little bit of self-preservation involved in that decision that kind of cuts both ways.
You right.
Pull it too soon, Dart goes in and flops, well, then you're kind of, you know, you're out of lifelines. But if you pull it too late and, you know, all right, Dart plays 1 or 2 games, like, is that enough to kind of state your case? So it's going to be fascinating. I mean, listen, it's probably the only thing I'll be monitoring at some point this season unless they really do surprise. But I think when they make that switch will be fascinating. And then, of course, it kind of resets a little bit of the evaluation because, again, if Dart comes in the last 5 games, you think, oh, we really have something here. That kind of buys everybody, I think, a new lease on life.
Do you guys spend any time looking back to that late season win over Indianapolis where it was like the most impressive performance of the year and it cost you the number one overall pick and a chance at Cam Ward?
I would say in the immediate aftermath, yes, a lot of Giants fans unhappy with that result. I would say, like, you know, the offseason is so long, and when you see how things have come together, I think fans are actually pretty excited with how it turned out because, you know, if they had the number one pick, they would have taken Cam Ward, and, you know, who knows how that'll turn out. Instead, they end up at number three. Abdul Carter falls in your lap. I mean, this guy looks like, you know, the next coming of LT, you know, at least through you know, a couple of practices and preseason games, obviously getting a little ahead of ourselves, but he looks like obviously a really great, impactful defensive player. And then, you know, Jackson Dart, you trade back up, get him at 25, you have no idea what to expect there, and we still don't. But I think just the excitement he generated with the way he played in the preseason, I think fans are kind of okay with how it worked out. But certainly at the time, there wasn't a ton of excitement. But it's also something I think was very, very important to Dable and this regime, you know, let alone the fact they lost 10 straight games. The fact they went out and scored like 41 points with Drew Lock, it's something he could point to. Like, listen, if I get a quarterback who will play the way I want him to play, this can be the result. I mean, he really said as much after that game. Now, I'm skeptical that that is what the result will be weekly. But I think it was important for him to at least have some sort of proof of concept. Like, listen, Daniel Jones held me back. We, you know, get a different quarterback in here, the results will be different. And, of course, now he's kind of, you know, Russell Wilson's obviously the bridge, and he's banking long-term on Jackson Dart being the guy that validates that belief.
All right, we'll come back to the quarterback situation here in a moment. But I've said this for actually a couple of years running, but definitely heading into this year, and I'm curious as to what your reaction is. I think the Giants have a really good roster. I think the quarterback is the biggest question mark. And of course, if that's a question mark, then the team is a question mark. But everything else is pretty solid to much better than just solid. What do you think?
I will say that Joe Shane's actions support your theory there, because you look at this offense that ranked, I think it was 31st in the league in scoring last year, 10 starters return. And obviously the one that doesn't is a big one. And, you know, I think with Russell Wilson, I don't think they have any illusions that he's going to be, you know, MVP contending Russell Wilson from a decade ago. But I do think they believe he's, you know, a professional and a quality, at least game manager, whatever you want to call him at this point, that you put him in that offense, it's going to raise the level there. And then obviously the defense won't be in as many situations where they're playing from behind and, you know, they have to do everything because the offense is so bad. And I do think the defense, if there's anything that's going to make, if we're looking back in this conversation in 4 months and say, wow, the Giants surprised, or when the Giants were this year's version of the Commanders, I don't think it's going to be because of quarterback play. I think it's because of their defense, because that's the part where you're talking about roster. They have some real studs there now.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, taking some time to piece it together. But obviously Dexter Lawrence, I mean, I think he's inarguably the best nose tackle in the league. Brian Burns is a guy who, you know, they gave up a lot to get him, but he's still a very good player. Again, the excitement you add with Abdul Carter, if he lives up to half of the billing that he's, you know, coming into the year with, you have a stud there. And then they've made other additions like a Paulson Adebo and Javon Holland in the secondary, which, you know, those guys haven't been, you know, all pro players, but they're certainly upgrades on what this team has had in the past. So I think you can see the ingredients for a really good defense. And then again, I think the belief is just having an average quarterback will raise, you know, the waters for the entire team. And again, that's the theory that we put to the test.
Before we go back to quarterback, I thought Tyrone Tracy had an underrated rookie season. Devin Singletary, we know who he is, and Cam Scadaboo was drafted in the fourth round, and everybody saw him at Arizona State in the college playoff. Tell me about the running back position.
Yeah, no, I think Tracy kind of fits in this group they have of the draft class from last year. They're banking on those guys making a big year two leap. I mean, obviously Malik Nabers kind of already made his leap in year one, so you're just expecting that arrow to continue pointing up. I mean, I think he's probably going to be knocking on the doorstep of being a top three, top five wide receiver.
Agreed.
If you go according to plan. But that next batch of players in that draft class, whether it's you know, Tyler Newbin was a safety in the second round, Drew Phillips was a nickel corner in the third, Theo Johnson tight end in the fourth, and then Tracy the running back in the fifth. All four of those guys played a lot last year, were starters, showed promise. Tracy probably showed the most promise in terms of just flat-out production. So they're counting on all of those guys. They're expecting all of those guys to make a leap. And so as far as Tracy in particular, you know, he came in, was behind Devin Singletary. Singletary gets hurt, and then Tracy takes over in week five and literally kind of ran away at the job and was very productive. I think he's still a guy, you know, he converted from wide receiver to running back late in his college career. There's still some finer points that need to be tightened up. Ball security was a major concern last year. Pass protection, you know, type of things, not shocking that a converted wide receiver would struggle with. But if he tightens those up, then maybe there's optimism there that he isn't a finished product. He could, maybe, you know, maybe the ceiling is that much higher. But, I mean, he's the number one guy. Singletary, it's, you know, they weren't going to go into this season with, like, you know, no proven guy there. He's a veteran. He's been around. He can do the pass protection stuff. Like, he's kind of a safety valve. And it's got to be a little bit of a wild card. You know, obviously his college career is very well documented. Showed some real promise early in camp, but then he's been battling a hamstring injury basically since the spring. He's finally back. But I think that's going to kind of slow his roll a little bit. I think he's going to be used sort of as a change of pace, at least initially. And then it would probably be dependent on how Tracy performs. If, you know, if maybe his role gets reduced and Scadabo increases, and of course if Scadabo is making the most of his opportunities, they will make it more of a timeshare. But I think it's Tracy's kind of, I don't say job to lose, but like the workhorse role is there for him to seize, and he's going to get every opportunity to do so, you know, right out of the gates here, I would assume.
You've talked and mentioned Malik Nabers. I think that, you know, he's a year away from being in that Jefferson Chase LSU, you know, top tier. Sure. Class. I mean, 109 catches as a rookie with the quarterback situation you had last year is just incredible. All right, so quarterback. First of all, Russell Wilson, who's had an interesting 3-4 years, you know, where, you know, we learned about what a diva he was in Seattle and how badly they wanted to move on from him. Then he had the stuff with Sean Payton in Denver. He couldn't wait to get rid of him. You know, he's had the year in Pittsburgh last year. They didn't want to keep him. So what so far has been, you know, the Russell Wilson experience in New York?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think anyone who follows me, and this is obviously going to go out to Washington listeners, I'm a bit on the pessimistic side, so I don't quite buy into a lot of the off-season hype and good vibes that I think a lot of people get intoxicated by. So all you've heard is like, what a breath of fresh air. He's so positive. This guy's been there. He's done that. And my thought is, they said this in Denver 3 years ago. Yep. They said this in Pittsburgh last year. Like, he isn't changing who he is. It didn't make a difference. I mean, his record in his last 4 years as a starter is 23-32. That's with three different organizations under three different Hall of Fame-bound coaches. So it's not like he was in these terrible situations, you know, other than the Nathaniel Hackett year. Maybe we'll give him a mulligan on that one. But he's been about a 500 quarterback under Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, and Mike Tomlin. And as you said, all three of those guys either actively moved on from him or were happy to let him go. So, yeah, I think that's telling. You know, I think it's one of these things. The beauty of the league is sort of the market kind of tells you how guys are viewed. You know, we can all make lists and argue it, but you know, he was out there this offseason. The Steelers showed no interest in bringing him back, and he signs here for $10.5 million. I mean, that's, you know, like less than Gardner Minshew money. So he's certainly not a guy who I think I'm expecting to come in here and light the world on fire. I think the Giants have, you know, higher expectations. I think they may be disappointed. But, again, I do think they're looking at it as he's going to be a lot more steady than Daniel Jones. Like, Daniel Jones is like the, you know, he was, whatever you thought of him this first like 4 or 5 years, the bottom really just fell out last year. Like, he was basically incompetent. So I think they feel like if there's a baseline of competency with Russell Wilson, he's going to make the big deep ball that he can still do that as well as ever. So Malik Nabers are going to have some games where he's just going to go off because he's going to catch, you know, 280-yard touchdown. Like, there's going to be a game or two like that for sure. So I just think they feel like he adds a solid floor, which had been very volatile under Jones the last couple of years. But, yeah, I don't think that the ceiling is very high with Russell Wilson.
Is Jameis Winston beloved in that locker room like he has been in every other?
Yeah, for sure. And it is a very interesting mix, though. And, like, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out because, you know, they put out the unofficial, quote-unquote, depth chart, and Dart was QB2. I mean, that had been the case all throughout camp, but still on the official depth chart, or unofficial depth chart during camp. Jameis had been the two. So we really didn't know coming into, you know, Sunday's game who's actually going to be active as the backup and who's going to be the emergency third quarterback. We still don't know that definitively. But if that's Jameis and he's just sitting there, you know, not dressing for, well, not, you know, not being active for games, just kind of holding the clipboard, like, how will he take that? Because he is definitely a big personality, definitely very outgoing, and I do think players like him. But I'm just curious to see how those dynamics will play out. If, you know, he came here, you know, I think he thought he'd be the backup, and now it's like looking like he's going to be the third. So, and again, there's just big personalities. Russ is very set in his personality. He's one very kind of unique, upbeat, always personality. People kind of question how authentic that is. You got Jameis, kind of like this big personality. And then Dart kind of has his own sort of like, he's got this young, kind of cool personality. So I'm fascinated to see how the three of those guys will coexist and if things go wrong or if there's changes being made, how they all deal with that internally.
All right, so how chomping at the bit is Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka to get Jackson Dart into a real game?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that's hovering over everything. Like, again, I think in their ideal world, you know, Russell Wilson goes out, plays pretty well, the defense plays really well, they're hanging around 500, and they can just hold off on that as long as possible. But I also think there's a real possibility if they get out to a rough start, that, you know, this schedule has been well documented how tough it is. You start with two road games in the division, come
brutal.
Back and you play,
yeah.
You know, you come back and play KC and the Chargers at home. So it's like 0-4 is very well within the realm of possibility. I don't think, and then they go to New Orleans for week 5. if they're at 0-4, even 1-3, I would not be shocked at all if Jackson Dart's debut comes much earlier than anyone would have projected or hoped or planned. Because, I mean, Dable loves the kid. Like, he can barely hide his fondness for him. You know, just the way he played in the preseason, that's going to fuel outside pressure to play him, internal in terms of, like, I'm sure ownership is sitting there saying, wow, we might have really struck gold with this kid. It's going to be hard to justify sticking with Russell Wilson if the team is struggling, knowing what you have there. And again, it's preseason, maybe we're overreacting to it, but there's only one way to find out. So if the team is scuffling, I don't see how they can stick with Russ. And again, I do think, you know, this has been Dable's guy throughout the draft process, throughout training camp. Like, he clearly has a very high level of affection for Dart. So, yeah, I think if things go south with Wilson, he won't hesitate to rip the Band-Aid off. And I think, again, it could be as early as, like, week three, week five. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be late in the year. It's really in the ball kind of in Russell Wilson's court. If he plays well enough, he holds it off. But I think the moment he starts to falter, they'll pull the plug.
All right. Record-wise, what's your best case and worst case?
I mean, best case, I would say right around 500. So knowing we don't have 500 records anymore, like, I don't think they can get the 9 wins, so I would say 8-9 is probably a realistic best case scenario. Worst case, like, I think that the talent is good enough. And I don't think it's going to be as bad as last year, so I'd say like 4 or 5. So like, it's in that 4 to 5 to 8 range. Like, I don't think there's a huge variance here. I'd be very shocked if they're like 2-15. I'd also be very surprised if they're 12-5. Like, I think they're going to fall in that lower middle class. You know, you're not really in the playoff hunt, but you're not picking in the top 5 either. That's just kind of how I feel it's going to play out. But there's a lot of variables with this team, especially with the quarterback situation, because, again, when they pull the plug from Wilson, we have no idea what you're going to get from Dart. So I think that's why they probably want to hold off as long as possible, hoping that Wilson's keeping them afloat. But, again, it's easy to sit there and have all these nice plans of how we're going to react, you know, when we're talking here on whatever, September 3rd. That changes a lot when losses start piling up and stress starts building. So, but yeah, I think they're in that range, that like I said, the lower middle class of the NFL, but at least hopefully out of the basement where they've been for far too long.
All right, last one. What does the team look like health-wise and otherwise coming into Sunday's opener in Landover?
Yeah, I mean, good, very good, really. The only two question marks coming in is Theo Johnson, who I mentioned earlier, and it's been a little strange. It was like there's no injury reports during training camp, and they haven't been practicing a ton, so it's hard to get a handle on what he's been dealing with because he hasn't been out there for a couple of weeks. But just around the practice field right now, you only get to see a little bit, of course, during the season. But he looked like, you know, full go, so I would expect he'll be in the lineup. So that really only leaves left tackle Andrew Thomas as a question mark, and that's a huge question mark. I mean, I would say you could make a strong case he's their most important player. You know, at a time, you probably could say he was their best player. I think, you know, Dexter Lawrence has certainly surpassed him there. But when Thomas has been out of the lineup, and that's been a problem the last 2 years, the offense has been bad with him in the lineup. It's been, like, you know, unplayable without him. So they need him. At the same time, he's come back from a Lisfranc injury. I think everyone knows, you know, those are major injuries, and a big guy having a foot injury is even more concerning. So I think they're going to be conservative with him. So I'm not saying they'll rush him out there for week one. So I think there's a chance, you know, Washington might be able. So I got a big truck driving by me here outside the facility. I think Washington may be able to avoid him, but I would say it's, as of today, we're sitting here Wednesday afternoon, I'd say it's 50-50. I should have a better sense, you know, after practice today or, you know, Thursday. So, you know, you get my Twitter handle at the start there. People can check in there if they want to keep tabs. But, yeah, he's definitely up in the air because it's been a long recovery, and I think they want to be cautious about rushing him back. So I think that's the one that's very much up in the air.
Dan, thanks. Really appreciate it. Great job. Have a good trip down here for Sunday's game.
Yeah, thank you.
Dan Duggan, everybody from The Athletic. The Giants have a good roster. They got a good roster. They've got a good defense. This will be a challenge on Sunday for Washington offensively. I mean, look, the good defenses they faced last year weren't, you know, the biggest challenges. They put 36 up on the board on Philadelphia's defense late in the season and turned the ball over 5 times, which is nearly impossible to do. But the Giants will pose a challenge defensively, and I think, and we'll go through this tomorrow, the key is, and it's going to be this in a lot of these games, you got to be able to stop the run and get the opposing offense off the field and don't allow them to shorten the games this year. The longer the games go on, the more possessions there are in games. That's going to favor, in most cases, our team. All right, when we come back, we are now, you know, just 7.5 hours away from kicking off the NFL season. Just a reminder on some of the significant, impactful rule changes heading into this season and what Cliff Kingsbury just said about Bill, as in Jacory Kroski Merritt. We'll get to that and more after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980.
All right. Happy Thursday. It is the first day of football. Welcome, everybody, to the NFL season. Here's the news of the morning. I am Max Ames. It is September 4th. The Denver Broncos and linebacker Nick Benito have reached an agreement today on a four-year extension worth up to $120 million, including $70 million in guaranteed money. Benito is now the highest-paid non-quarterback in Broncos franchise history. And according to ESPN and Adam Schefter, the Philadelphia Eagles made a strong push to trade for former Cowboys pass rusher Micah Parsons. Philly and GM Howie Roseman inquired about his availability, and Dallas had very little interest in trading him to another team in the NFC East. Juwan Jennings ends his holdout with the San Francisco 49ers and adds $3 million in incentives to his deal this year. He can earn up to $10.5 million in the final year of his contract. The Nats, they sweep the Miami Marlins in what will be described as the Nassim Nunez game. Nunez was called up from AAA Rochester on Monday, going 3-for-4 with 2 home runs. Final score for the Nats, 10-5. They will have the night off tonight and will take on the Chicago Cubs tomorrow. Finally, football is back. The Dallas Cowboys, they travel to the Link in Philadelphia for the inaugural game of the NFL's regular season. It is also banner night for the Philadelphia Eagles. They are favored by 8.5 with a heap of sharp money coming in on the defending Super Bowl champs. That'll be tonight at 8:20 on NBC. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980. Hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.